Welcome to show number 8 of Slacker Astronomy, a podcast about astronomy and just about anything else that floats over our heads.
Every week or so, we'll bring you a summary of recent news events from the world of astronomy. And during slow news weeks, I may just sneak in some music from one of my assorted musical projects.
I always knew you used to be a star.
A star? I mean, no. No, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, yeah, I might have the occasional groupie and get, you know, the occasional fan email and everything, but I don't think I'm really a star. I mean, wait a second. Did you say used to be a star?
Yep. You used to be a star.
Well, not used to be. I am a star.
Nope. Not anymore.
Well, people come to my shows. They listen to the music.
Oh, Travis, it's okay. I know that in your secret little fantasy world, you are a rock and roll legend. But in real life, you have been a former star since the day you were conceived. So was I. In fact, so was my dog.
Pamela, your dog is not, was never, and never will be a star. Your dog pees on people's shoes, and that does not garner stardom for anyone.
My dog was a star. Not a celebrity or anything. But the carbon that makes up her skin, and the iron in her blood, and even the calcium in her bones, all used to be part of a star.
A star? You mean me, you, and your dog all used to be a star like the sun is a star?
Yep. See, today's show is all about stars, and how stars are responsible for creating pretty much all the atoms in the universe that are heavier than hydrogen and helium.
When the universe first formed, it underwent a brief period of nuclear fusion, when the temperatures and densities of what was then all of space weren't too different from what you'd find inside of stars. When these nuclear reactions were over, the universe was 25% helium and had trace amounts of lithium and beryllium, and everything else was hydrogen.
All these non-hydrogen, helium, lithium, and beryllium atoms were formed in just 3 minutes. To get to the next easily formed atom, carbon, the universe would have to wait until stars had formed.
Forming carbon is a rather challenging act of stellar alchemy, which requires something called the triple alpha process. This reaction involves 3 helium and requires just the right temperatures and densities to occur. It is a very slow reaction, too. In those first helium-producing 3 minutes just weren't long enough to create carbon.
The first stars entered the scene several hundred million years after the Big Bang. These early stars, like early humans, just didn't look and act like what we're used to seeing today.
Early stars had bushy eyebrows and big heads?
There were no Cro-Magnon man eyebrows, but the stars were bloated. Early stars formed from clouds of gas that just couldn't get cool. These hot clouds formed really large hot stars, many of which were hundreds of times the size of the sun.
Weren't you telling me that all large stars explode?
Violently.
So all the stars that formed in the early universe exploded?
Very violently.
That just doesn't seem like a good thing. I can hear the news anchors now. And tonight at 10, Stone Phillips reports on the new fad among stars. Exploding. Stars everywhere seem to be following this self-destructing trend. Tune in to find out which stars are likely to be next, and what you can do to be prepared.
With no heavy elements, there were no planets, and there could be no life. Who are the explosions going to bother? In fact, it's because these stars all exploded that the universe was able to start building up the carbon and other elements that the Earth required when it started forming a few billion years later.
The second generation of stars formed out of a mixture of the stuff flung into space during these explosions and stuff from the Big Bang. Some of these stars are still around, and astronomers are slowly but surely finding some of these elusive stellar elders.
While really large stars burn through their nuclear fuel quickly and then explode, small stars just sort of putz along, giving off a little bit of light, very slowly burning through their fuel. The large stars are the cosmic hummers, tearing apart everything that gets in their way. While the small stars are more like a Prius. No, they won't go 160 down the highway, but they can get you from Boston to New York with 4 gallons of gas.
4 gallons? $2 a gallon? That's $8. You mean, if I get a Prius, I don't have to take the $5 Chinatown bus to afford to go to New York City?
Well, if you can afford the $21,000 price tag to get a Prius.
You know, that Chinatown bus is just about the best thing ever created.
But returning to stars.
Oh yeah, I used to be a star.
So the little stars burn through their fuel very slowly, and some of those second generation of stars are still out there and still slowly burning.
An international group of astronomers using the Japanese Subaru Observatory recently found the second of the 2 most metal-poor stars ever seen. This star, with the ever-so-creative name HE 1327-2326, has 250,000 times less iron than our sun. It is the first unevolved star to be found with such a low amount of iron.
Strangely, though, this star does have a lot of carbon. It's this carbon that has scientists thinking that this star came from a second generation of stars. It is possible that when the first generation of stars exploded, their iron-rich cores collapsed into black holes, while their carbon-rich outer layers got flung out into space and recycled into a new generation of stars.
It's also possible that HE 1327-2326 is a low-mass member of that first generation of stars, and the carbon that we see on it has actually fallen onto it over time. Think of HE 1327-2326 as a potentially dirty star that had its pristine, carbon-free exterior polluted as it traveled through the disk of our galaxy.
Sounds like someone left it out in the open in Gary, Indiana.
Well, no one ever claimed that carbon pollutants were unique to Earth.
Trying to understand how stars like HE 1327-2326 came into existence is sort of like trying to understand what goes into a casserole. If your Aunt Matilda shows up with something consisting of chicken, potatoes, green beans, squash, and creamy mushroom soup that is coated in potato chips, you know she had those things available when she was cooking. If one day she shows up and the squash isn't in the casserole, you know you should ask her if some critter got her squash from the garden this year.
Your family's not from around here, are they?
You don't like good middle-of-the-country casserole cooking?
So how does this relate to stars?
When the squash isn't in Aunt Mattie's casserole, I know something prevented her from putting it in. With her, it's usually the squash vine borers. If I find a star that has a lot of carbon in it, but not a lot of iron, I know something has prevented the iron from getting in. Supernova can release both iron and carbon into space.
When astronomers noted that HE 1327-2326 had carbon but not iron, they were able to place some constraints on what the universe has been and is made of. Either we've got a lot of carbon hanging around waiting to leap into the atmospheres of unsuspecting old stars, or the early supernova that released the carbon didn't also release the iron.
When stars more than 120 times larger than the sun explode, they completely explode, and there ain't nothing left but a large pretty cloud of stuff like carbon and iron and even gold and silver.
So you're saying the jewelry is nothing more than ashes from supernova explosions?
It's all about the spin, Travis. That pretty bling you give your girlfriend is made of stardust, not soot or fallout.
And if the exploding star belongs to that first generation of stars, and it is small, say just 100 times the mass of the sun, most of the iron and heavier atoms fall back to form a black hole, leaving just the carbon to go out and make stars.
So our little HE 1327-2326 may be telling us that the largest of the first generation of stars weren't generally larger than 120 times the size of the sun.
All that from just one star. It must have taken generations of stars to build up enough materials to make the planet Earth. Lots and lots of supernova went into the formation of the copper deposits in Arizona and the gold in them there hills in California.
There are some scientists who think that our little Earth may have formed about as early as any planet could possibly have formed.
So there are probably no little gray men out there who have been exploring space for a billion years?
Probably not. Maybe little gray dudes a few thousand years more advanced, but there's a lot of statistics to think about. But that's a topic for a future monolithic monologue. I think it's time to finish up this podcast.
This episode, and in fact for this entire month, we're going to do something we've never done before and don't plan to do again for at least one more year. We're going to ask all of you, our gentle listeners, to click over to Podcast Alley and tell the world that you like us.
It's our goal to soar for at least 1 month in their ratings.
Now, it may sound like we're going on an ego trip, but we're actually doing this for a logical, or at least financial, reason. You see, we're in the process of trying to find money to support our podcasting habits. Buying equipment, buying bandwidth, and just getting properly caffeinated to record all costs money. In order to get funding, we have to convince potential funders that someone is listening. And this is where Podcast Alley comes in.
We also encourage you to send us letters, write comments on our message board, and otherwise scream to the world, "I am human! I am listening! I am not a netbot!" We liked the 4 comments on our last show, but 40 would have been much more exciting to a potential sugar daddy.
So please, if each and every one of you could take some time this month to drop us a message and go to Podcast Alley and vote for us, it would really help. Our email address is info@slackerastronomy.org.
And we'd really like to thank those of you who have donated money to us through PayPal. Aaron and I have our Griffin lapel mics, and we'll be buying our first iRiver in the next couple of days, I think. We are in the process of scheduling interviews with a bunch of astronomers, and this equipment will really help us sound a little more pleasant.
So long, and thanks for all the support. So long, and thanks for all the support. We love you, former stars, each and every one of you.
On behalf of Aaron and Travis, this is Pamela Gay.
Clear skies and clear bandwidth, this has been Slacker Astronomy, a volunteer collaboration for you, for fun, and for the voices in our heads.